You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, April the 8th. It's absolutely freezing cold. Spring is over. Winter is back. Icy blast here in TW11, as there is across the whole of the UK at the moment, with the wind changing direction rapidly. I'm off to Kempton Park today. I've got every available thermal at the ready, gloves and scarf and hat packed in the car, and looking forward to an afternoon of pretty decent flat racing. But this is the week where all roads lead to one race. That one race, the Randox Grand National, 5:15, ITV or Racing TV on Saturday. You must not miss it. 40 horses, 30 fences, nearly 4.5 miles. The world's most famous horse race. David Yates from the Daily Mirror is with me. And if this race is important to all of us, it is hugely important to the mass-selling red top tabloid newspapers who make such a fuss of it every year. And we're very grateful that they do. Yatesy, there is nothing like the National.
There is nothing like it. It's the most famous horse race in the world. Every year the National throws up a story. 2021 won't be any different. Clothcap, he's bidding to give National obsessive Trevor Hemmings a fourth win in the race, and of course a first for Tom Scudamore. Any second now, he's part of a very strong entry for JP McManus. Katie Walsh finished third aboard Seabass for her father Ted in her riding days. Now the two train any second now in partnership together. We've got Burrow Saint. Paul Townend went for x-rays on a foot injury yesterday. Will he be riding through the pain at Aintree, or will he give the mount up to an understudy? Minella Times, of course, Rachel Blackmore, so dominant at Cheltenham. She's bidding to become the first woman rider in history to land the Grand National. That theme also brings in Bryony Frost aboard Yala Enki and Tabitha Worsley on the very interesting outsider, Sub-Lieutenant. Brian Cooper, he was once the child star of the jumps weighing room. He had to rebuild his career after parting from Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary. He's on Discorama. Let's all have a disco, the headlines will scream. That's for Paul Nolan. So there's plenty to go at every year. 2021, no exception.
So let's start with the man who will be riding the heavy favourite for this year's Randox Grand National, Clothcap, Tom Scudamore. The Scudamore name inextricably associated with this race, as the rider has been telling me.
It's obviously the race that has had an enormous influence in the Scudamore household from a very early age. I can remember sitting and listening to Dad and Granddad talking about their Grand National memories, and as I got older, I was able to join in with them. But it's going to stay with Granddad, and he had such a tremendous record in the race and over those fences, and I just remember being, you know, listening to his tales of going over them. So yeah, it's though it didn't quite work out for Dad, it's always been the race that all three of us have at the start of the season, you always want to have a ride in the race, and all three of us have been desperate to win it. It didn't work out for Dad, but hopefully it'll work out for me.
The name P. Scudamore is not officially credited with any victory in any Grand National, but he has been completely involved in the training of three Grand National winners, hasn't he? Earth Summit, Bindery, and one for Arthur. And you only had to look at those BBC shots when he was a BBC pundit, and Earth Summit was winning the race. I mean, the kind of contortion on his face as he thumped the table furiously, I'll live long in my memory. It just shows you what it can mean.
It did. He had a massive part in Earth Summit, not just for the training. Granddad and Dad bought Earth Summit as well as a store of Jim Old. So it was, Earth Summit played a huge part in my youth, as it were. Although he never won the race as a jockey, he's had it. He has had a bit of Grand National success following it up. But although I say nothing in his name, but he doesn't mind that. He quite likes it that way.
He will love it even more if the name Scudamore is back in the winner's enclosure. I mean, do you see Clothcap as the ideal horse? We all do. The market does. It seems so obvious to us. But what is it to you?
Look, I've seen it time and time before. It looks that way. again, it's the old cliche, you wouldn't swap him for anything, because you know, if I was riding something else in the race, you'd be looking over thinking Craig Crosscat would be the one everybody wants to ride. You know, he's stayed 4 miles plus in the Scottish National. You know, he's put up some great performances this year, and you know, he's got the stone well in. So all those things, you know, sort of point towards him having a great chance. But you know, we can rabbit on about it all day. It all looks good on paper, but you've got to go and actually do it. And you know, I've seen time and time before. You know, you can talk as much as you like, but it's the deeds that have got to go and do it. And you know, if we'll come 5:15 on Saturday, that's when we've got to go and do it. So it's nice to talk about it. It's a lovely position to be in. But we're, you know, I'm very, very aware that we've got to go out and do it.
Obviously, you've ridden in Grand Nationals when the fences were bigger, stiffer, harder. The race was more demanding in one way. It's just as much of a stamina test now, even if the fences don't take quite as much jumping. Do you think the complexion of the race has changed? Do you think it's actually altered which horse might win it?
Possibly. I think it might be now more of a... it's always been a fantastic race to ride, and don't get me wrong, and actually, you know, since the modification of the fences, it's still a test, right? It's not probably quite the test where they've taken the drops out as it was when I first started riding, but you mustn't underestimate the fences around there, because otherwise you end up on your backside. But you know, it still takes a bit of jumping. I suppose the relentlessness of the race has changed now. You know, whereas I used to find that it was a mad dash to Beecher's Brook, there was some respite bite once you sort of jump the canal turn and made your way around to the chair. It does seem to be, you know, since the modifications, a more relentless race. So yeah, that probably does. I think that does put even more emphasis on stamina. I'm not sure. Although it's a long time ago, I'm not sure. You know, they used to say that you'd need a 2.5 mile. You know, 2.5 miles could win the Grand National. I don't think that's the case anymore since all the modifications.
Yeah, we put a fork in that one quite some time ago, I think, that theory. What's been your best national finish so far?
6 on Vieux Lion Rouge. I've had some fantastic rides in it, but unfortunately, my record in the Grand National tends to be being sort of being in contention coming across the Melling Road and not quite getting home. I had great rides off Sol, the Package, Vieux Lion Rouge, Blowing Wind, but all of them didn't quite manage to make it all the way.
Oh, Blowing Wind, that's just about in black and white now, isn't it?
Feels that way.
There's plenty of life in him yet. Don't worry about that. On which note, it'll be Aintree with no Richard Johnson. How weird will that feel?
Yeah, it will be bizarre. It'll be bizarre going anywhere and not seeing him in the weighing room. I felt, you know, it felt quite emotional really on Saturday. I had sort of got an inkling that maybe it was going to happen this week. And you know, in many ways, it'd been lovely if it had happened at Hereford on Sunday, but it wasn't, you know, for him. But it wasn't to be. But you know, he went out the way he wanted to go out, and that was just typical of the man. Understated, and the outpouring the outpouring of accolades that he's been getting is deserved. You know, I think he's been. Just about the best ambassador for jump racing there could possibly be. And when you talk about people and their careers, you know, you talk about people, maybe some people come back with regrets or wish they'd done this or that. You could safely say Richard Johnson left everything out there on the park. He never let anybody down, and was quite frankly, I suppose my favourite competitor to ever ride against, just because of the way he conducted himself, and I'm sure everybody would say the same, but they have.
Tom Scudamore there with lovely words about Richard Johnson at the end and thoughts on his Grand National Mount Clothcap, indulging me as he's going to have to indulge every interviewer for the next few days with questions about how many times he's ridden around the Grand National course and his grandfather winning it in 1959, etc. Dave.
Yes, indeed. Well, Dickie Johnson's retirement on Saturday hands an unwanted record to Tom Scudamore, doesn't it? Johnson had 21 losing mounts in the Nash, and now that award, if I can put it that way, goes to Tom Scudamore with 18. Victory on Clock Cap, of course, would turn that around, and it would settle some family scores as well, wouldn't it? Late grandfather Michael, he was the patriarch of the Jockeys dynasty. He passed away at 81 in 2015. He won the National on Oxo in 1959. Father Peter never won it, famously, despite being champion jockey eight times, including one split, of course, with John Frankham. You don't have to deal too many times, Nick, do you, with Peter, to imagine him as the real-life version of competitive dad, the fast show character played with panache by Simon Day. He was always thrashing his sons, Toby and Peter, at cricket, squash, even Monopoly. He beat them in one episode. A win on Cloth Cap would certainly give Tom one over his father, and it would settle a score in a very meaningful way.
Well, if you are a Cloth Cap fan, the one thing you won't want is a load of rain between now and the weekend. It looks very unlikely that you will get any. I've been speaking to clerk of the course, Saleka Varma. It is her first Grand National. I began by putting it to her that she'd been made to wait.
I officially started with Aintree in the February. And obviously April was going to be my first Grand National, but by mid-February we started talking about this thing called coronavirus, and by March it was pretty serious, and we ended up cancelling, as everybody knows. So that was disappointing at the time for everybody, because we were sort of 70-80% of the way ready to race. And to have the plug pulled like that was a real shame, but in hindsight was certainly the right thing to do, and we're now in a better position to run a behind closed doors event this year.
Slightly different from Cheltenham, because there'll be more owners allowed at Aintree. I think it's six per horse, which will still give it quite a nice feel for the Grand National. And I was reflecting on this, I don't know whether you'd agree, obviously we want a huge crowd at Aintree, it brings the place alive, but the National's always been a sort of TV event as much as a crowd event, whereas I've always thought Cheltenham was so propelled by the crowd, the lack of a crowd there really did make it a very different feel.
Yeah, I think the Grand National has a worldwide appeal that means that the TV event side of it is a lot more important and a lot more crucial to the event. It will be strange having, you know, we will have owners here, which will give us some atmosphere, but it won't be anything like a normal year. So we're hoping that the owners who come do enjoy themselves. It won't necessarily be the experience that they'd be used to, or that we would normally be able to offer at a Grand National meeting. But, you know, it's great to have them back. They're crucial to everything that goes on in our sport, so to have them back on course for the Randox Grand National is superb.
Now, the weather's not being extremely helpful to you, because you're not getting the rain that you'd like, but it's not very warm either. It's going to be quite cold the next few days.
Yeah, we've actually turned colder later than was originally forecast. We thought we were going to be cold over the weekend, and actually we've ended up with a few milder, sunnier days. Towards the end of last week, there was the promise of rain the early part of this week, particularly last night just gone, and also then towards the end of the week that has now diminished to virtually nothing, so our hand has very much been forced, and that we've started watering again today with our usual aim of good to soft on the Grand National course, and certainly starting on good to soft on the Mildmay course.
Yeah, because it can get quite lively around the Mildmay track as well. There's no significant rain forecast this week, really, is there?
No, not at all. I mean, the only bonus for us is that this colder weather will mean that the track won't dry as fast as it would do under warmer circumstances. But I wouldn't be at all surprised to see us watering again during the week. We're expecting certainly to go once more before we start racing, possibly go tomorrow and Wednesday. We'll make a call on that later today. And Thursday is looking dry, Friday perhaps some showers, but again not looking to total much more than a millimetre, and then Saturday at the moment looks fairly sunny but still very cold for the time of year.
Saleka Varma, who has had to wait to officially preside over her first Grand National, and of all the jobs that there are in grounds management around the world, Dave, I would say this is one of the most high pressure.
Yeah, it's certainly one of the most scrutinised. I mean, every major race. Of course, we talk to the clerk of the course about conditions. But I think the element of horse welfare, of course, and understandably so, is uppermost in our minds when we're talking about conditions at Aintree, not merely how the ground is going to suit various horses, but what it's going to be on the day. Of course, in days gone past, there was no watering, and sometimes the National would take place on, you know, ground that would make us shudder. Today, Mother Nature isn't going to do her work in the sense that it's not going to be a wet week and thereby take away the need for watering. So I imagine that's what it's going to be. What we can say about Seleka Varma, she's risen through the ranks of the Jockey Club pretty quickly as a clerk of the course. And I'm sure that she will preside over a successful three-day meeting. You've only got to speak to her to realise the commitment that she throws into the job, as well as the ability she takes to it. So we should be in safe hands. There's no question about that.
Okay, let's talk about Richard Johnson. We spoke about him extensively yesterday and his retirement from the saddle. Lovely piece by John Randall, the statistician in the Racing Post today, detailing exactly his achievements. They are many and varied, but Dave, I don't think we can leave it there.
No, we can't. And again, because this happened on Saturday tea time, that Dickie Johnson announced that he was bringing his career to an end. Not a massive shock in that he's 43, but of course it was done without a warning. Six winnerless rides at Newton Abbot. That pretty much sums up the modest nature of this man. And I'm repeating myself as well here, but when people say that nice guys don't win, well, Dickie Johnson's career gives us a perfect riposte, because he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and he won 3,824 times. Of course, that is famously second only to Sir A.P. McCoy in the all-time jump jockeys list. He retires in one piece, he retires on his own terms, and he retires, I think, with all of our best wishes.
Well, much has been made about the enduring partnership between Richard Johnson and his principal trainer, Philip Hobbs, but he has an equally long association, I don't know, maybe longer, with Henry Daly, whose horses he's ridden from the word go pretty well. Henry joins me now. It's been a lovely friendship and a lovely professional relationship the two of you have had.
Oh, extraordinary. And I mean, one of my mates in life, Eddie Hales, has always said to me, what I find so extraordinary is that R. Johnson has turned up with you every Tuesday morning to school, whether you've asked him or not, for the last 23 years.
He's just driven into your yard. And for those who don't know, you're not exactly down the road from anyone, are you?
No, we're not particularly centrally located, I think would be the best way of putting that. And he would start off from Stowe each morning when he lived over there, and he'd come in every Tuesday and Friday. Never failed. Extraordinary. Quite extraordinary.
So what is it about him, do you think, that has made him not just so successful, but so consistent over such a long period of time?
There are one or two combinations. He's lucky. He was, if you could describe the perfect shape for a jump jockey, he probably was it, or is it, in that he's of ideal size and his weight was never a huge issue to him. And also then his mental fortitude is just extraordinary. I know people for years have talked about AP's mental fortitude and things, but Richard's was as driven and as strong mentally as anybody I've ever met in my life.
I mean, this is actually something maybe I didn't and should have explored yesterday. Do we think McCoy could have been McCoy without Johnson, if that makes any sense?
Oh, I think if you talk to AP, he will tell you he wouldn't have done what he did without Richard driving him. And he does say that. I mean, I have read in the last couple of days, things exactly along those lines. It is hard, again, to sort of eloquently put how tough he is. He's extraordinary. His pain threshold is, most normal people would have lain in a hospital bed for 10 days waiting to get over bits and bobs of what Richard's done. He just would carry on. And how he achieved that, I'm just in total awe of that. Total awe, because he was extraordinarily tough.
He must have a certain degree of almost bloody-mindedness to him to be so driven, so competitive, so physically tough, yet on the outside appear to be pretty easygoing, well, be easygoing, in fact, not appear to be easygoing and just be friendly and pretty polite to everybody all the time.
I think he'd, in his own words, I think he's described it as numb. He had a sort of numb way about, you know, he would just carry on being, you know, just numb. And he just, as you say, incredibly nice, kind, polite, extraordinary, quite extraordinary to be that polite, even when you're in that much pain. Most people, when they're in pain and things, they get very cross and very angry. He just extraordinary.
I know you appreciate victories for all sorts of degrees of significance. I mean, what have been some of the most significant moments you and he have shared together, either high profile or less so?
Oh, undoubtedly Edmund winning the Welsh National very early on in the 99, that was, and I mean, that was just fantastic from my point of view. I mean, and obviously his, but it was just great to get that on the board early on in your career. And then later on, the sort of the likes of Mighty Man were just tremendous round Liverpool. He was very, very, very smart around Liverpool. Why quite he was as good there and not quite as good at, say, Cheltenham, I don't know, but it was just one of those things, horses for courses, and he was like Richard, and he ran there with almost the perfect fit. It was like driving a motorbike around there, and he was tough and hard, and they were almost the perfect match.
And he told a nice story against himself about how he'd debriefed Simon and Helen Plumley not very well after getting off Briary Fox, but I can't believe there were too many post-race debriefs that went awry.
He never did it again. I mean, he was very cross because Briary Fox at the time had won, I think he'd been second in 4 points, and then he came to me to run in hurdles. And Richard, to be fair, didn't have a very good ride. They'd had an argument after about 100 yards, and then the argument carried on for the rest of the race, and he came back in. And as he says himself, you know, he learned the lesson not to get off and say your horse isn't particularly nice and we don't get on very well. He did, many years ago, got off a lovely horse of mine, having ridden it left-handed at Chepstow, who was called Lancastrian Jet. He won 14 races, and he got off, and in the politest way I've ever heard anybody say it, said to Jane Heber-Percy, who owned it, "I'm sure your horse is extremely nice and jumps extremely well, but unfortunately he and I don't seem to see eye to eye. Would you please never ask me to ride him again?" And he meant it in the nicest way, and he never did ride him again. And after that, he won the Mildmay Caslet. He won the things all going right-handed, and it was all to do with going left.
Well, his diplomacy was noted, as was his toughness, as was his great talent and skill in the saddle. You'll miss him, won't you?
Oh, massively. I mean, not only as a jockey, but also just we used to have some epic conversations about life and the general ins and outs of being involved with racing and our views on it and things, but just that sort of side of it you miss as much as anything else.
Always lovely to chat to Henry Daly. My thanks to him, to Saleka Varma earlier in the show. Good luck to her and her team this week, who are working extremely hard on the ground and the fences at Aintree. And to Tom Scudamore, the man who will ride the Grand National favourite Cloth Cap, who spoke to me toward the beginning of the programme. Just a couple of other loose ends to tie up, Dave. You put it to me when we spoke yesterday, has anyone heard anything from Davy Russell? Well, I spoke to him this morning. I gave him a call and I said, "How are you doing? I haven't forgotten about you." And he said, "No, I've got another scan next week on his neck just to see how that's going." He said if he does end up getting the all clear to ride, he'd like to think about Punchestown, but that's probably less likely than more likely, because once he does get the all clear to ride, he's then going to have to sort his weight out and get back to riding weight and fitness and whatever. But he said he's not raising the white flag just yet.
He's 41 though, Nick, and time and tide waits for no man. I would have thought that there was an attractive option at Coolentrar House with Gordon Elliott when he returns to the training ranks for Davy Russell. If he doesn't come back at Punterstown, then we're looking at the next jump season. That seems a while to wait for me. So I'm not in the business of retiring people, certainly not retiring jockeys, but it wouldn't surprise me to see that that partnership with Gordon Elliott take place in maybe a more official form.
Yeah, I remember when Barry Geraghty broke his leg very badly at Aintree a few years ago, and he was being retired by all of us. And there must be something in you as a rider when you've had a very serious injury like that, saying, no, hang on my terms, please. Rather as Richard Johnson has just done, retired on his own terms rather than being retired by injury. I think psychologically that's quite important.
I think it's very important for all of us, really, that not just jockeys and not just sportsmen and women, that when you retire, in our egos, we like to be there and for people to say, thanks very much for the job. We appreciate what you've done. If you're a jockey and you're on the sidelines, you just merely say in the press, well, I won't be coming back. That's a very, very different thing. And I completely understand why Davy Russell wants to return to race riding. It seems that if that's what his mind is fixed on, and we know that he's a determined character, then maybe that's something that we will look forward to in the autumn, and he can retire on his own terms. But I think that day isn't too far away, and I don't think that's a view that I hold on my own.
Just one final point, Dave. We know that as Salaeker was confirming to us that there'll be six owners per horse at Aintree this week, but there won't be any official crowds, and the idea of a trial was thrown back by the local council. Moving further into the summer, deeper into the summer, what extent we think that vaccination passports will have a role to play in crowds on racecourses? I did post this question to David Armstrong in a text this morning, the chief exec of the Racecourse Association. He sent me one back saying he thinks there'll be a clear steer in the Prime Minister's announcement today about vaccination passports and attending live events. He says he thinks it's highly likely that there'll be some vaccination passport inclusion in that today, but in his words, the RCA have been working on solutions. I guess he means working on ways around that.
Yeah, it sounds to me that despite lots of opposition from his own party, that Boris Johnson is in favour of some form of vaccination passport. Obviously, we've talked about that in relation to going to the pub, but certainly it has a strong relevance in terms of attending sporting events, among them race meetings. So, yeah, it's not something I'm keen on if I give my personal view, but it seems equally something that 10 Downing Street is keen on. So I imagine that will be something that when we go forward beyond Royal Ascot and June the 21st, when in theory, if things go according to plan, there will be full crowds, then that's something that we will have to deal with, vaccination passports.
And finally today, have you posted your entry for the Furlong Factor yet? The Racing Welfare second series of the Furlong Factor, racing's favourite singing competition.
I haven't yet. I was rather tired yesterday. I meant to do something on it and decide which of the three pieces I'm going to submit. But I hope to work on that in between Aintree features today. I think I'm going to go for a bit of Verdi, my favourite Giuseppe Verdi, one of the true greats.
Excellent. Is Made in Italy going to be your selection today in the 402 at Kempton Park?
No, what a wonderful link. But it's actually Divine Connection in the 120 race at Wolverhampton. Back to winning form over course and distance last time. Actually has a record of 2 from 3 over 7 furlongs at Dunstall Park. And I hope that she can take that to 3 from 4 this afternoon. 120 at Wolverhampton. Number 4, Divine Connection.
David, thank you very much. That was Monday, April the 5th, and this is Grand National Week.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.